Hello and welcome to A-Team Group's podcast on leveraging the cloud to support maximum compute performance, brought to you from a panel session at our Trading Tech Summit in London on February the 27th. The podcast focuses on infrastructure design and approach, when to use the cloud, how to support legacy and cloud systems in a hybrid environment, and managing data in the cloud. The panel was moderated by Jim Alton, Associate Partner and Cloud Practice SME at CityHub, and joined by Peter Williams, Chief Technology Officer at CJC, Robert Johnson, Chief Technology Officer at Cormant, Robert Griffiths, Director and Head of High Performance Computing and Cloud Services at MUFG Securities EMEA, and Bill Beards, President at BCC Group.
We're going to talk today about how we leverage the cloud. I mean, specifically, really, we're going to talk about HPC today. Although that was the brief, I very much suspect we will expand from that. I think it's fair to say for most, certainly the big sell-side firms that I work with, HPC was probably the first, well, among the first, if not the first use case looking when driving adoption of public cloud. But that's not to say it's a fully solved problem or to say that there aren't sort of key decisions or hurdles that need to be overcome when driving that adoption and that roadmap. So with that in mind, we've got a great panel here today represented from the buy side, the sell side, and also from the service provider ecosystem. Hoping they will, in fact, I'm confident they will give us some good insight into some of those considerations. Before I hand over to them to do some intros, I think we're going to run a quick panel first. We'll let that run while we're doing the introductions, but if everyone can get ready on their Slidos, hopefully you're kind of familiar with this by now, and we should see that first one pop up. So really, this is just, where do you see, in your experience, what are the biggest barriers to cloud adoption from your perspective? So, okay, wow. I don't know if it's going to stay there, but we'll let that run for a bit. While we do, want to hand over, starting with you on the left, please, Peter, some introductions.
So I'm Peter Williams, CTO at CJC. At CJC, we specialise in managed and professional services for global capital markets firms. Our solutions leverage deployed and cloud, and we really do focus and specialise in real-time market data delivery platforms. And we've been embracing cloud, both public and private, for a number of years. And presently, we're helping our customers accelerate their deployment into cloud for specialist complex systems.
Hi, I'm Rob Johnson. I work for Cormant. I'm a partner and CTO there. We're an asset management servicing company you've never heard of. There's a little clue if you go to www.cormant.com. DNS lookup fails at Brevan Howard. So we were spun out of Brevan Howard last year and have been in stealth mode segregating everything so that Alan can't see anyone else's stuff. We're effectively utilising what's been built up in Brevan Howard over the years, sticking a really nice front end on it and making it globally available to other funds. I will not be talking about MiFID II or Brexit. I can promise you that, and please punch me in the face if I do. It's for my own good. And latency, I'm not talking about that either, because from the buy side, fast enough is all we really care about. Monday is pretty good. Possibly Tuesday at a pinch. What I do care about is cost, availability, flexibility, scalability, and cost again. We built our product on AWS, with a rather nice front end, although I do have experience dealing with Azure and Google as well.
My name is Robert Griffiths. I look after high performance computing and cloud services at MUFG. It's within the securities arm of MUFG, one MUFG and all that. We have been doing high performance computing in the cloud in production since the end of 2012. So you can say we've been using Azure since the day it was in nappies, really, from the incubation period. It's been a journey for sure. We are currently rolling out more workloads into the cloud, not just high performance computing ones. And we're on a different kind of journey now.
Great, thank you. And my name is Bill Beards. I work for a company called BCC Group International. We have a product in our portfolio called the One Solution, which is essentially a market data aggregator. We have partnerships with all the major data providers. We do entitlements, we do ingestion, we do distribution via one API. We're partnering with many of the firms up here and many of you guys, I'm sure, to help move market data into the cloud. We believe that is the right place for market data, most of the market data, and we like to be the ones that help push that and make that a reality. So,
great. Thank you very much, everyone. So just a quick review of that. I think it's pretty overwhelming at the moment. Security seems to top the list. And surprisingly, given, I guess, a lot of the conversation this morning, compliance and regulation is right down the bottom. Okay, so I think we're going to run one more of these later on. We'll interleave that in with the rest of the conversation. But I mean, maybe we'll just kick it off now. Going back, going really down to the fundamentals. Think about the basic deployment patterns or service models that we could employ for our HPC platforms, private cloud, public cloud, maybe even bare metal as a service. Maybe good to get the some insight from the panel. What are your experiences with those different models? What considerations should firms be taking when looking at what the right mix is for them? Maybe if I pick on you, Peter, to start.
Yeah, so from my perspective, we're a facilitator, so we don't have an application that we want to put in the cloud ourselves. We have our own tools to wrap around it, but we don't have a sort of a dog in that fight. And what we coach people on it is really take a step back. Don't kind of make assumptions. You get a lot of people that say, I'm moving to cloud, and they'll just spin up a VM, install what they always installed in the same way they always installed it, and then go, it doesn't perform any better, or in fact, it's worse, and it costs more. And it's like, well, what did you expect? You did the same thing. So we sort of suggest that there's two ends of the spectrum you need to sort of really understand. What does your workload do? Understand your workloads. What do they do? What do they need from their infrastructure to do what they do? How do they do what they do? And then I'll get onto this in a little bit more detail later on, but what do the users need from it? A lot of people will try and kind of boil the ocean and say, oh, we have to put it in, maximum performance and all of this stuff. And actually, understanding those fundamental things is one part of it. But then at the other side of the scale, understand what the clouds do. All the clouds are different. Yes, they provide the same thing, but they do it in different ways, and maybe they cost it differently, or maybe there's different benefits of doing it with one provider over another. If you can get a good understanding of those two things, you can make some really smart decisions about how you deploy your workloads in the future, and how you really leverage cloud in the way that it's really meant to be, and that's reinvention and efficient utilization.
So I guess the message is don't bring the kind of baggage of the old world across to the new world.
If at all possible.
Yeah, sure. And Rob G, maybe if you're from your experience, I think you're fair to say you were really pretty much an early adopter of Azure. I mean, tell us a bit about the journey you went on there, and maybe what kind of mix have you got, public versus private for your group workloads?
I've certainly got all the battle scars and the wounds from dealing with all these things from the early days. So it was originally a question of how do we make our workload capacity more flexible? And so you obviously have the option of buying more stuff in the data center, but nobody really wants to do that, especially when it's a very large bill, a very large digital option on buying a new data center. So how can we be smarter about doing this? So we had some problems to solve regarding particular need for computation at the end of day, for example, to deliver the risk quicker. So we wanted to borrow some computers, and Sun had been around for a very long time, offering their $1 per core hour. But nobody was really doing that. At this point, we had an on-premises grid, and we looked at alternative solutions. And at the time, Microsoft did have a product that was amenable to using their infrastructure in the cloud on a temporary basis, but delivered via platform as a service. So again, we were relatively early adopters of platform as a service rather than infrastructure as a service. Sure. And actually, this was ultimately very successful. It took a very long time to get there, and lots of very close working partnership with Microsoft to deliver and improve product features that we needed to make it work for our own needs. As a result, as I said, we've been live since 31st of December 2012 on scalable, burstable workloads in the cloud, and we've now continued to do so and expanding that remit, looking at additional ways that we can actually make use of maybe more native solutions to the cloud for some of our compute facilities, as well as adopting non-HPC workloads as well.
And are you you use, I think you use the word scalable burstable, so are you using the cloud just to skim off the top of the demand, or are you and you're holding some sort of certain capacity internally? Or
there is some capacity internally. It's probably something we will never get rid of, probably. Yeah. Never say never, but the fact that you can turn it around straight away. But if I tell you that if I look at our weekly utilization for the servers that are on-prem, if we hit 30%, we're doing well.
So that's
whereas
not
the stuff on cloud, yeah, for the time they're being deployed, if we drop below 90, we're having a bad day.
So that's not for the reason that it's cheaper to hold certain capacity internally. It's more about the data or the type of application.
Yeah, so we do have, you know, the workload in which it's delivered is still quite legacy.
Yeah.
So everything from, you know, the market data side, the deal data side, the way in which the information is extracted from our core booking systems and the market data platforms, all of the risk scenarios, they all sit on-prem. It was kind of designed that way. Again, you're talking 8 years ago, so
sure,
people different mindsets at the time. And actually, we squirt up everything we need to calculate in the cloud. It calculates it, and it squirts back a very small amount because extraction is much more expensive than input.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
And that's the way it works. So if we want to make it scale better, faster, quicker, whatever, all those good words, then we will need to move the data to the cloud in the first place. So all of our, you know, the UR data, the original data, the stuff from which we calculate all of the requests, that can be done in a scalable fashion. That can be, the throughput can be improved. So then we will moving from so-called high performance to a high throughput computing, which actually is much better. And we'll be able to deliver the results quicker because we'll be able to scale faster, work for shorter, and then the results get returned quicker. That's still work in progress.
But that sort of model makes sense to me. Like when I speak to people and they talk about doing stuff, a lot of people seem to assume you have to do it wholesale.
Mm.
And we're saying to people, no, so think of it as a spectrum, right? It's about putting
stuff
in the right place. And
yeah,
the way I imagine it will be is the thin end of the wedge will be the on-prem, the differentiation stuff, maybe the stuff that you really don't want to let out there.
Yeah,
and
that's
then
fine.
You go into private, and that might be because you need niche technology or niche skills. And then the rest of the workloads can be pushed out into public where it's more kind of consumable and efficient.
So the workloads that we have right now are in public cloud.
Yeah,
just it's obviously, you know, fully secured in HTTPS
and all that
kind of jazz, right? So that's all good, and secure data at rest and transit, blah, blah, blah. That's all fine. But actually, it's bog standard public cloud.
Well, with the thing earlier on with the majority of people saying security is a big concern.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's just how you deploy
security
it.
Of what?
What is this concern?
It's a big topic.
What are they concerned?
It's
a big topic.
Yeah. So I thought we got rid of this 5 years ago, but it's back.
Yeah. There's a quite nice segue there into the next question we were talk about, which was, I know we do have quite a lot of cloud evangelists on the panel here, so maybe to bring a little bit of realism, we were going to talk about where shouldn't we use the cloud. Bill, I think you are one of those evangelists, but I think it's touched on data and data gravity an issue.
You know, I think you've got to identify those workloads that are clearly not cloud safe.
Yeah.
I mean, things that you feel are very close to the security of your business or private data or something, but even HR applications are going into the cloud now. A lot of things like that, which could be considered very secure, are there. So I think you need to, it's a walk-run thing. You've got to, just like with my market data to the cloud, when I talk to clients, they all want to do it, but they're all just a little nervous about the fear of change. And I think it's the same thing with the cloud. It's you got to pick a few, as Pete said, you got to pick a few things that you're comfortable with, start to dabble a bit in what you can do in the cloud, and then it'll grow from there once you get comfortable with it. And I think that's a key thing here. So there are going to be things you're never going to put in the cloud. There's no doubt. But I would say that, you know, I would err on the side of saying yes over no, unless it's something really blatant that you don't want to have in the cloud. Because every piece of workload can be done there now, in my opinion. So.
Yep. And Rob J, I mean, in terms of your sort of stance as a firm, do you have a clear guidelines as to what?
I nearly broke my pencil. I'm so angry. All right. So the security thing. I mean, really. you all share data centers, so you all share real estate with other people. We have data segregation. You have physical segregation there. But yeah, HR, eDays, PeopleSoft, everybody uses it. So all your clients or your personal stuff is in the cloud. Salesforce, who doesn't use Salesforce? So all your client data is in the cloud. I mean, get real. Right. Moving on. Around the original pitch was about getting into the cloud, how do you do it? So we've got a kind of a cloud first policy, which it sounds a bit hackneyed, but that's just what we do now. I get people to give me a justification if they actually want to buy a server. That's where we're at now. That's not to say that we're in a great place, because we still have inherited a business that was on-premise. So we have lots of data repositories. My first task I set myself as CTO last year was map it, do all the data at rest, all the data flows, all the data transformations. And then what can we move into cloud? And the answer is pretty much everything. It's just going to take time. So watchwords, containerize where you can. That gives you an element of movability. Use infrastructure as code. Go Terraform, something like that. You can then, I even met somebody who's using AWS for their primary, Azure as their backup for DR. Now, I don't even know if, I don't know if they've had a DR event to really test that, but that's the extent they've gone to. Don't necessarily expect savings. I mean, I know I banged on about cost, but that was just for comic effect. You may not get savings, but what you will, it depends on your approach here. I think you certainly do get savings, because you didn't have to buy squillions of kit up front.
And then manage it. Only for your risk department
to then turn around to you and go, oh, actually, I only need 10% because I've done my main compute now. And you go, hey, I've got a data center full of tin for 5 years. What you have to think why you need it on-premise, really. I think if you can move your data into cloud, then your main challenge then is egress charges. You really kind of want to get all your data up there, so you're minimizing data egress. Then you do your data wrangling in cloud. If you can put your repositories and your source of data up there, and with EDP from the Electron Data Platform from Refinitiv and BPipe from Bloomberg going into cloud, that's all possible too. So it's really about working out how much you can move, and you don't want to bounce in and out, really. You don't want to be bouncing back to an on-premise repository to pick something up to push it back up again. I am looking to put everything up there over time. I've got a few things I'm left with, because I really don't want to be the first beta client to go with a Murex in cloud implementation. That's just a world of pain. Please don't quote me. Chatham House. otherwise, everything else is up there. You will go through a hybrid period. Yeah. That's unavoidable. Certain niche skills were mentioned, but niche technologies, things like if you've got an FPGA farm, although there are specialist purveyors of this technology out there who will sell you an FPGA farm, but that stuff is a bit more difficult to pop into AWS. Everything else, not a problem.
And from a, I guess, data, and I've heard a term, I'll use it again here, data gravity, which I think is sort of summarises some of what Rob's talking about there. Do you see, is there a tipping point at which you see, you know, that data as it moves to the cloud is going to drag everything else with it?
Your sources are up there. If you can get onto a data source, I know we talked to Six Financial about this about 8 years ago, something like that. They were talking about it then. At that time, Bloomberg was saying, oh, but we have our own cloud. And I was like, really? No, you don't. You need to look at AWS. And at that point, it wasn't there, but it is now, as of October, November last year, I think. I can't remember who was exactly first, but both Refinitiv and Bloomberg pushed their products for real time, as well as tick history, up into cloud. Then you've got that tipping point that you actually don't necessarily have to host stuff on premise. And both these vendors, I mean, I'm NDA'd up with Refinitiv, and I know they have a timeline of other products that they are pushing into cloud. And they're not just looking at AWS, it's AWS, Azure, Google, even Alibaba, although the whole Chinese thing is a bit of a challenge there at the moment for most people in this room, I guess. But they're all in play.
And the providers have to be dynamic enough to be able to present in any of the clouds, because Yeah. It depends on where the, again, it's where do the customers want it? Where do they want to access it?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the first question you ask the client, what cloud do you prefer? Yeah. It shouldn't matter, really.
Yeah. But in terms of the demand, I mean, as a provider, I think Peter, maybe you're the same. So can you see, is there a noticeable shift of where customers are asking for the data to be presented? Is it on-premise with a growing demand for it actually natively on the cloud platforms? Obviously, you're delivering the cloud yourself.
I think that they're looking for on-prem still a lot, yeah. I think it's just gonna take some time for them to get comfortable with the cloud. We just did a production rollout of our solution in the cloud in AWS, and the data was coming over so fast they asked us to slow it down. So there's really not a latency issue. I mean, we're not talking about HFT or ultra low. We're talking about the rest of the data, right? The rest of the timeline. But it works beautifully, the cloud. And I was going to say before that, you know, if the cloud providers have a breach, they're out of business.
Yeah. Yeah.
That next day, they're out of business, right? So they have to make sure that they get this right. And they've got to make sure they've got HA. They've got to make sure they have DR. They've got to make sure they have redundancy. They've got to make sure nothing gets breached. Yeah. As soon as the first one happens, it's over, right? And that's what they need to be careful of. So it's their jobs, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And a huge investment in industry compliance as well, and the likes as well to help.
And we're going to go back 10 years if that happens. Yeah.
So I'm a little bit confused on time. I think we're a little bit behind, but I think we're probably about time to run the second poll, I think. So maybe if we can get that up, and then we'll move on to the next question while people are answering that one. So... where do the cloud providers fundamentally, where do they need to improve most? I guess the flip side of the earlier question. I can probably hazard a guess what the answer might be, but let's see. Okay, so while that's running, maybe we'll just flip this around a little bit. So, yeah, as capital markets firms, and this is, I think, somewhat related to the first poll, as capital markets firms, as also for the financial services industry, you know, what do we need to do to adapt our culture, our mindset, our way of thinking in order to take fuller benefit from the cloud platform? We've maybe touched on some of this already, but maybe Rob, I'll go back to Rob J.
Where do they need to improve?
So, where, yeah, as an industry, where do we need to sort of change and adapt our you know, to really take full benefit?
Yeah, okay.
This is not necessarily a technology question.
It's not a technology question. For a lot of people, it's around mindset. And I had a conversation with the ex-COO of a very large German bank over dinner not so long ago, and he was adamant that he didn't want to put data into cloud. He wanted to put it in and keep it local. And I used the phrase inopportunely. Well, that's why you're the ex-COO, which was harsh. But there's an element of mindset, but also it's around our tooling. So if we're looking at legacy kit, there are defined mechanisms to move our systems up into cloud, but they get increasingly difficult. So there's often like the 80-20, 70-30 type of split where you've got some of it you can lift and shift, some of it you can lift and tinker and shift, and then some of it you actually have to bite the bullet and rewrite. And it just has to die. And I've got I've just had an email off my CEO complaining about something. Actually, somebody was complaining to him about a particular product we had that was failing, and we said, well, that's not a problem. My CEO responded to say, that's not a problem because the new in cloud version is due real soon now. So that's the answer. We're not going to bother with the old one. We're going to keep it alive. Yeah, maybe just and then eventually we'll unplug it, but the new system that will run in cloud is the replacement. So we're not actually building on-prem anymore. It's all in cloud, and that is the mindset change that we're looking for. But then I have the support of my CEO in that, which is very helpful.
Absolutely.
It's about speed as well. I think people kind of assume cloud's going to be really fast and it's going to be instant results, instant change, and it's like, well, no, this is, when it's migration of legacy systems, it's actually a journey. You need to be able to say, look, costs may go up slightly and then they'll come off, but people kind of go, why isn't it immediately cheaper and immediately faster? You say, well, okay, we're double dipping at the moment. We've got some on-prem, we've got some in cloud, we've got to move the legacy stuff. There's a bubble cost of some dual running. You need someone, you know, senior with the vision to say, we're going to stay the course, we'll get there in the end.
Well, and I think certainly what I've seen is, you know, bridging the traditional silos between infrastructure and maybe the business and development communities to actually look at a broader business case to say, all right, infrastructure costs might go up, but, you know, maybe we're able to sell.
The cost argument, that's specious maybe, because it's... Yes, it's more expensive to run stuff in the cloud if you compare like for like. Yes. Right? If you're doing IaaS lift and shift, which you shouldn't, it's going to be more expensive because they're going to be overspecced on-prem servers, which you're going to run overspecced in the cloud. If you look at your utilization, it's going to cost me twice as much on a like for like. But actually, at 20% utilization here and 100% in the cloud, it's going to cost me a fifth as much.
Absolutely.
We win.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, really? Yes, okay. And then back to the mindset change. It's much easier to retrain an additional skills for your training for people who have things like network engineering skills, DBA skills, or you know, a C-sharp program or whatever, than it is to train competent API programmers to have network skills or DBA wrangling skills. It's much, much easier to do that sort of mindset altering as opposed to mindset growing.
We've got a DevOps engineer in our Scrum teams now, so that it's integrated with the development team.
That makes sense. And building on from that is you've got, you know, the way most successful cloud systems are built, they're built from the perspective of customer experience. So it's all about when the rubber meets the road, what does that end user experience and what do they need? And from an engineering background, you want it to be all powerful and all kind of encompassing. But actually, if you're saying, right, we've got a couple of hundred users, they're using conflated real-time data and they're looking at it with human eye type stuff, cloud's perfectly capable of delivering that at absolutely the service level needed. And from there, the technology only improves. And that will open the doors to more kind of advanced use cases. As data moves more natively into cloud, then you can start to get really aggressive with it. But you have to step back and get your business to look at it from the perspective of, okay, what do you need? Not what do you want, what do you need now and where do you want to go?
I would say that every company has cloud on the agenda. Every one of them does. And when the clients I talk to, they say, my CTO, my CIO wants things to go to the cloud.
Yeah.
Just and you're the perfect app to do that for me. This market data piece, right? Mm-hmm. So I think they need to just create, you need someone that's an advocate, and you got to create a list, and you got to decide what's the best early adopters apps, and then go, right?
Yeah, so we're probably just going to bin one or two of the other points we had and move straight onto the audience questions. So the first one, actually, we did debate whether this was one of our potential polls was something along this line. So good to see this pop up. So, do we see Google as a credible competitor to AWS and Azure?
I'm just going to go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to say yes. Yeah. The technology they have is superb. It really is. They're just seemingly not that interested in dealing with anyone.
Yeah.
so that's pretty much the way it goes. So as an enterprise-friendly firm, no, not so much. They really haven't got that history like Microsoft has.
So on the scale AWS. From Microsoft to AWS and the friendliness.
Google. Oh, friendly in terms of the people, fantastic, great, really, you can build up great relationships with them, and the staff are absolutely superb, really knowledgeable, fantastic at driving things forward. However, as a, you know, the amount of money that the enterprise firms, like big businesses, like banks, would bring to Google is negligible. Yeah, we are not even a pimple on the bottom of the dog compared to what YouTube, one video on YouTube can bring them. Yeah. So, whatever. But actually, technology-wise, it's great.
That focus is changing with Google, though. I know they're standing up their financial services
arm.
I mean, we partner with them for some of our stuff.
Yep.
And they are interested in... But they do it in a very Googly way.
Yes.
Like, they're very much... Okay, they'll take a sideways look at the industry and go, well, how can we disrupt and how can we bend people to think of things in that Google kind of way? Whereas AWS have kind of been around for ages. Azure are smart in that they've got a lot of regulatory stuff tied up of the office suite is one of the big parts of that. It's because that's the document.
Well, I think as firms, we have big leverage with them to change their T's and C's that we might not have.
Jim, I also think that the fact that you've got such a big environment for office, customers are not likely to use as much Microsoft, perhaps, because they want to spread their investment in the clouds across, right? So I'll just tell you that from my experience from working with the cloud providers, they're in every industry except financial services. They are just rampant everywhere, right? All of them are, and now they're starting to spell the word financial. A lot of them are, right? And I think we're helping them with that, and we're advocating that with them. And Google is one of them. Google's definitely has a team focused on financial services. They're trying to build a story around
very
it.
Very much.
And we're with them to get there.
I did say I worked with all three. And back a couple of years ago when I was working at, let's call it a mega bank, we did actually use Google for our that regulatory thing I said I wouldn't talk. That regulatory system. And they wanted us to transact through a third party. They wouldn't actually, we were global, mega bank, enormous, like top five. And they didn't want to transact directly. They didn't want to contract with us. We had to go through some third party bit player firm, who I hope aren't here. And that was quite frustrating. Yeah. So after that, we just went, no, we're just part Google. I do know they've been hiring quite heavily in terms of relationship.
You do need to find the right third party.
And I do know they are building data centres in a certain European location, which is probably of interest to some of the firms here.
The reason they try to abstract like that is they don't want to get into like any regulatory type stuff. They're like, no, we've got a cloud, you can do what you like with it.
Well, there's the answer to your next question.
I see we've got some voting on these, so the order's changing a bit. Let's go with the top. So is putting, and I'm sure I know the answer to this, but hopefully the panel do, is putting market data into the cloud considered outsourcing under the MiFID and FCA rules?
I'm not a lawyer. No idea.
I think that's to be defined. I think you've got to let the regulators make that call. Right? I don't know if anybody knows.
If you strip it down, is it any different to being delivered out of Definitive's environment or Bloomberg's environment? They were cloud just because the term cloud has come about. This is old stuff. This is somebody else's computer.
It's just a delivery mechanism at this point.
Yeah. And it's all about reporting and timely reporting and regular reporting, and you can do that out of the cloud, right? And validation of the data.
So, next one, do you see liquidity moving to the cloud, and will this be fragmented across the providers, the platforms?
What do you mean by liquidity?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, does anyone want to put that? I guess it means the trading platforms, the venues, the dark pools.
Okay, that's about the one thing I wouldn't move into the cloud in terms of if you've got CME here, you want your algo running here with a cross connect to it. That's obvious, really.
Yeah.
But
the virtual cross
for high frequency purposes, yeah.
Well, within reason, put it that way. We don't do HFT, so
I mean, I think going back to some of the topics earlier, I'd say this was unlikely, certainly in the short term. In terms of fragmented, I mean, there's another angle there, and maybe that's coming onto this one, right? Which is certainly EBA and other regulators are now very much concerned about concentration risk. So, the flip of that fragmentation is, how are we dealing with that, both from a reporting perspective and actually in real world operationally, how are we dealing with, that concentration risk?
Well, if you don't like the American providers, it's Alibaba.
That's the option,
yeah.
I guess is it about the US or is it about the reliance on...
the US
on,
hyperscale, yeah.
Yeah.
If you're talking about single point of failure, I mean, you could try to write your solutions to be multi-cloud capable.
Yeah.
You're effectively
you need tooling to abstract it.
Lowest common denominator to be able to get to everywhere. Therefore, you're not making use of the platform tools properly.
And realistically, multi-cloud makes sense, right? Because you don't want to have that concentration risk of, one vendor suddenly lumping their prices or changing or going away.
Exactly.
And you need to be able to move it around. As like I said before, different clouds do things in different ways.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And some things are better than others.
Yeah, exactly. You want to be able to play in the whole, in the whole playground as opposed to just on one.
But if the regulator does tell you to move a workload, you should be able to have either a move plan or an exit plan for any workload to somewhere else, even if it takes a year.
That does preclude you from using some of their funkier kit, though, so you can't use all the lovely analytics and stuff.
But it's still container.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the more things you're more easily.
We run Docker and Kubernetes.
So it's all movable.
So we've only got time for one more question. I guess we'll go with the one which got the vote. So what are the cloud providers' general DR provisions if one of their cloud centers or availability zones, I guess, suffer a physical terrorist attack? What do they roll over?
AWS in the US, for instance, has four different regions, and they're all backed up and kept consistent with each other. So if North Virginia goes down, it transfers to another region. So I think that's there. But I agree with what Pete is saying about multi-cloud. You should always have your DR should be someplace else, perhaps, just in case there's some takedown of AWS, which is highly unlikely, but it should happen.
That is true. They all have these kind of failover and or rollover, whatever the guy's talking about. It's how seamless is it? QED, right?
I would argue there's a lot more onus on you as a customer of a cloud provider. This is a commodity service. Yeah. You've got to work this out for yourself in a lot of cases.
Most of the
cloud vendors will tell you it's a shared responsibility.
Absolutely.
To get it right. And that's very true. And you know, they have some kind of design for framework that you should try and implement. It's always good to get it reviewed by the cloud vendor. And you can do your best to have it multi-cloud. But even so, sometimes you are scuppered because of an unknown dependency that not even the vendor knew about takes you out. That's quite annoying at that point.
We've seen a few of those.
Yes.
I guess you've seen them firsthand, probably.
I still go back to the first story. If the first time they go to HA and it doesn't go to another region like it should have,
they're
out of business. So you know, it's just that they've got to do this right.
And when has your on-premise ever gone down?
Oh. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to our podcast on leveraging the cloud to support maximum compute performance from our recent Trading Tech Summit. For more content on trading technology from A-Team Group, you can visit ateaminsight.com, or you can also sign up for our next Trading Tech Summit, which will be held in New York City on June 11th and is free of charge for financial institutions.